Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Songwriters on Process podcast. My name is Benno Papari, and since 2010, I've run the Songwriters on Process website, where you can find more than 200 conversations with songwriters about the creative process. I'm not here to talk about tour stories, band drama, how a band got its name, or favorite foods. My goal is to treat songwriters as writers, plain and simple. This is an intelligent conversation about the writing process between two writers. Today's interview is with Grian Chatton of Fontaines, D.C. So I live in Washington, D.C., but I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania this week for work and saw that Fontaines was playing a show. And I went. I've not seen them live before, and I've been a big fan of the band for a while, so I was excited to go. I've seen many concerts in my life, and I have to say that this show would be in the top three best shows I've ever seen. If you get a chance to see Fontaines, D.C., run, do not walk to that show. Go. It will blow your mind. I cannot think of enough superlatives to say about how good it was. The energy, the swagger, the presence, the melody. They are so good on stage. They're such great musicians. I don't know what else to say. It was fantastic. The other thing I want to say is the opening act, Wonder Horse, also amazing. Their debut album comes out, and this is the Wonder Horse is the project of Jacob Slater. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Maybe Slatter, but anyway, their debut album Cub comes out today, I think, and they were fantastic. Blew me away, won over the audience. And so from start to finish, from the beginning of Wonder Horse to the end of Fontaines, top three shows I've ever seen. Go see both of those bands. I think their tour's almost up, but together at least, but so good. So I want to say that. Go see them. They're amazing live. Can't see enough good things to say about it. This was probably one of my favorite interviews I've done, listening to Grian chat and talk about his creative process was just fascinating. And, you know, when you write 24/7, do you even have a ritual? You know, he said one thing at some point. He said, I write all day, every day. When I'm in the thick of it, it's a struggle to focus on anything else. That was a recurring theme here. He writes all the time. And so there is no ritual. There's no time of day. There's no place because he's doing it all the time. And I get that sense that he does it because he has to, not because he wants to. I mean, I know he wants to, but he has to, he needs to. There's a real urgency to it. When we were talking, he was, I think, in LA when we talked, and he said, I'm exhausted because I'm trapped right now in a period of intense songwriting that actually affects my ability to hold a conversation. And I think he said that when people are talking and he's supposed to be listening to them, he's just thinking about a line, thinking about a song. When I'm in the thick of it, he said, it's a struggle to focus on other things. But here's what's interesting, because he also says he has a healthy relationship with creativity because he's never forcing it. And that's the great thing, is that it's not a barrier because he's never forcing it. He's got a good relationship with it. He writes on trains, planes, pubs, you name it. And he said he treats it, the key is treating it with as little importance as possible. So he writes on his phone because he feels like writing in a journal makes it seem too important. And so treating it with even though he writes every day, it's a paradox because he writes all the time. It exhausts him to write. But the key is placing as little importance on it as possible. He uses the word flippancy. There's no judgment, no pressure. He loves to write when he's in transit, some form of transit, because he says you don't have to react to things around you. He becomes aware of himself, especially when he writes on planes. He finds writing on planes to be very existential. There's a heightened sense of privacy. And his quote is that songwriting is a constant, annoying companion. I have writing on speed dial 24/7. But he also used the word exhausting a few times. It's exhausting to be there, because of this. There's a threat of being sucked into that void, and he hasn't established boundaries. So I kind of hear both things from him as I'm thinking about this. He has a healthy relationship, but because he's doing it all the time, I get the sense that he feels like he's got to establish some boundaries and not write all the time. But anyway, you can listen to this and decide. He's a fascinating guy. I mean, his and the band's relationship to poetry and literature is well documented, but we still talked about reading here and the importance that film, the influence that film has on him, on his creative process. But this is just a fascinating interview. And this is a longer intro than normal, but only because this interview gave me so much to think about. And so did the live show, which again, you got to go see. A few things about the audio here. It's a little bit uneasy at times. I was in a hotel in Holland, Michigan, and he was probably on the phone somewhere in California. So there's a little bit of crackling at some point, but I think it's fine. Just be aware of that. And enjoy. I know I did. Here is my interview with Grian Chatten of Fontaines DC. I always start by asking, you know, I like to read interviews with authors, you know, more traditional authors like poets, playwrights, you know, novelists, things like that. And they always talk about the ritual, about how it's important to write every day, even if it's shit. You got to get your butt in the seat and you've got to write. But I find that songwriters often don't say that to me. I mean, songwriters more rely on inspiration and writing when it comes to them. But it's odd that more traditional writers will never say that. So I'm curious your thoughts on that. Do you think it's important to create in some fashion every day?
That's my process for sure. I'm to be honest with you, I'm currently exhausted because I've been trapped in a mode of intensive songwriting and lyric writing for the last month or two, to the point where it's taken over my life and affecting my ability to hold a conversation. Not this one, but I mean, I had like a week there last week when I was talking to my dad at one point, and in every second that it took for him to respond to something I said, I found my brain going back to a line, for fear of almost like missing something or trying to finesse something, you know, see if I could whittle down the kind of sentiment to something purer. Yeah, basically, in short, I write all day, every day, when I'm really in the kind of in the thick of it, in the fray of it, I'm it's a struggle for me to focus on other things sometimes.
So is it that are there times when you're forcing it? I mean, you obviously have a lot to say, but are there times, I guess, if there are times when it's not happening, do you try to force it or is that never an issue?
I was in a band from the age of sort of like 14 to 16. And I was making music that, unbeknownst to myself, I didn't enjoy. I don't think it was really me. And during that period, I think that was the only time in my life where I've ever felt like I've written a song. And outside of that time, I don't feel like I've ever actually written a song. I feel like everything has been, I've just allowed them to happen.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And I know that sounds like I'm not trying to self-aggrandize as like some kind of aperture of this ethereal nest of songs that are just kind of I'm the chosen prophet that they fall on or whatever. But it's just, I believe that I've always had a really, just really healthy relationship with my creativity, and that's why I feel like that. It's kind of like when people say they've never worked a day in their life, which, you know, I have worked, you know, but it's never felt like that with writing for me, really.
Are you doing other types of writing besides songwriting, journal writing, or do you find that songwriting is enough of the writing for you, Dina? Some songwriters like to journal sometimes. Do you ever do that?
I do a little bit. Yeah, I kind of, I journal with the view of you know, just using what I like, kind of like I'm trying to kind of document the substance of a thought, in whatever form it is, if it's just a sentence or it's like, you know, it could be kind of, you know, the kind of particular setup of a room and the way that someone walks in or whatever like that. And there's, you know, something happens to you and you need to quickly just sort of write it down on a scrap of paper or on my phone. I use my phone a lot. Just to file it away so that when you revisit it, there's just enough of a kind of poetic description or whatever that it takes you back there, you know?
So I think I have a very specific, I think it's important to have a writing ritual. I have a favorite chair, like for me, and I write in one chair, but revise in another chair. And I find that time of day is important, things I have to have with me. You know, it could be superstition, could be confidence. But, you know, again, when you hear about more traditional writers, a lot of them talk about, you know, you have to know when, where is the best for you. So is there a time of day? Is there a place, things you have to have with you? I'm curious. Do you have are you aware of a writing ritual that you have?
Not really, to be honest. I think maybe it's kind of I don't know, sacrilegious or whatever, but I kind of treat it as during the process, I kind of try and treat it with almost like as little importance as possible in a way. Like that's kind of why I like writing on my phone. I kind of treat it with as much almost like flippancy and the least amount of judgment and the least amount of pressure as possible. And then kind of, you know, I tend to write loads of stuff that I don't necessarily like and then things that I would like to give flight to, you know. But I find myself really like writing an awful lot when I'm in transit. There's something about being on a train or a plane or an automobile that just being sort of translocal, you know, being in between two states, that feels like you're being gifted this time that you know, you don't have to react or respond immediately to things that are going on around you. It's kind of like when I was in hospital for like 2 or 3 months with pleurisy when I was in school, when I was like 9 or something. And I remember after a while, even though it wasn't a pleasant feeling being sick, but I remember being really kind of feeling like I had won this free time at the same time, you know. And that's kind of how I feel like when I get the tube or whatever, you know, and you're like, you know, for example, like you lose signal or you're on your own and no one wants to fucking talk on the tube. And there's a real freezing of time. And I find that really, things spill out for me, you know?
So it's funny you say that because I read an article in the Atlantic magazine about 5 years ago and they talked about, and I experienced this, there's a sensation of how easy it is, how people cry on airplanes watching movies rather than, it, you know, if you watch a movie on land, you're not crying, but in the airplane, something about a heightened emotional state that airplanes give us. Now, it's a fascinating article because why is it that some people, you know, you watch a movie on a plane, you cry, but you watch the movie on land, you don't cry at all.
That is the same thing. I feel that resonates, to be honest, with what I was saying. I think I've become aware of myself existentially when I'm in the air, you know, you're really, really kind of, you are taken out of context physically from the planet Earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're alone, you know, in the clouds, you know, with your thoughts. And there's an intense, like a really, really heightened sense of privacy, I think, about being in the sky. I don't know. I think I find access to maybe more truth for that reason as well.
Yeah. You know, the other thing though, from a practical perspective, if you're on the tube or, because I hear a lot from songwriters who tell me they get song ideas in transit, whether it's a plane or a bus or a car, because they're literally seeing things, whether they're seeing signs or billboards or hearing conversations, and those conversations give them a lyrical idea. So is that something where if you're around people in those public spaces and transport, where you get song ideas from seeing things or from hearing conversations?
I think I've always been very influenced by my eavesdropping abilities. Yeah, I think for me, my first kind of church of inspiration was very, very stereotypically, and I'm embarrassed to say it, was pubs, pub talkers,
right?
And I'm not sure exactly what it was, but there's a similar thing, to being in the sky, to being in a pub. And I think that people often, people are kind of incredibly raw and honest when they've had a couple of pints, even if they've had like 3 pints or whatever, there's this unfiltered behavior, which I think reveals a lot of truth about people. And also I think, when people let their guard down, they physically wear their insecurities on their face an awful lot more. Their acting skills diminish. I find that really fascinating,
I interviewed Britt Daniel from Spoon about 6 months ago, and he told me that he will sit at bars with his laptop and listen to conversations. And when he hears something good, he'll write it down in his computer. So there's definitely history behind that. So can you write well in the middle of the night? Some songwriters tell me they're pretty prolific, between midnight and 4 a.m. Is there a time of day, or does that not matter to you?
No, I think, this is the thing you were talking about, routine and having your chair and all that. I'm a believer in it being a kind of like constant, annoying, almost companion. I like to have writing on speed dial all the time, 24/7. You know what I mean? I've woken up with ideas and written them down. And I've gone back to sleep, and I've done a hell of a lot of writing in bars like that, like you were talking on nights out. But often what happens to me a lot of the time is I'd write on nights out when I'd had a few beers, but it would be spoiled for me the next day because I had shown it to someone the night before because I was kind of in an excited kind of semi-drunk state. I'd show it to someone else kind of in lieu of maybe being able to have a kind of meaningful conversation. I'd show them in an attempt to say, this is me, by the way, in case you're not getting it from my, from my uninteresting, conversation. But anyway, I it's spoiled for me often the next day when I show it to other people, because I've shown it to them in an embryonic state, and it's affected, and it's been exposed to the air too soon, and it's no longer mine. And, it just doesn't feel true anymore, and I don't recognize it for that reason.
Yeah. So from a practical perspective, you mentioned your phone, but I do you ever write lyrics on a pen and paper, or are you pretty much a phone, a computer person, or a pen and paper person when it comes to lyrics?
I used to be a pen and paper person, and I still do it a bit. I find it changes the way I write pen and paper.
How so?
Well, it could be, like just simply down to the fact that it's much faster for me anyway to type on my phone and edit immediately and get there kind of quickly. And I think I have a very, very distracted and I don't know what the word would be. I'm not very good at taking it, writing slowly and then you know what? I find paper a bit precious. Like, have you ever heard that? Like, you ever heard of people talking about moleskins as like the most terrifying thing in the world? You know what I mean? I find them a bit intimidating. And I think, you know, I've started about 10 of them in my life, you know, and that's it. I've got 10 crusty beginnings.
Well, that goes along with your idea, though, of treating it less, that treating songwriting as not precious, right? That makes you a more effective writer. So maybe those moleskins make it seem too precious, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like a load of people standing around a fracking operation in denial about it being bad for the environment. And therefore they go, you know, because there's a suspension of belief. There's a denial. There's a kind of like treating it with a, you know, flippancy or facetiousness or whatever. They go too far, and that's kind of what happened. What I'm doing, I think, when I allow it to be not taken too seriously, and then all of a sudden I've tricked myself into drilling too deep, or drilling very deep, you know. And
yeah,
I find it kind of easy to access those things. I do really, really love editing, though. I really love fine-tuning sentences, and I love the feeling of when you kind of you can kind of edit the structure and the grammar and everything of the syntax of a sentence, you know, all day, and then realize that the feeling, the sentiment is gone, you know, and you have to kind of really like close your eyes and dig deep and try and remember what it was, because it's so specific, and like language can be so limiting, you know, and it can make you forget what the kind of the innate thought was, you know, the original thought was. Yeats there's a quote in Adam's Curse by Yeats. I'm sure you know that poem.
Yes,
I think he says a line. I think it's like a line might be a moment's thought. I'm butchering it, right? But it's like a line might be a moment's thought, it's a line may take us years, maybe. But if it does not seem a moment's thought, then all our stitching and unstitching has been naught. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you can edit to zone in, or you can edit to zone out. You know. And it's difficult to know which one you're doing sometimes.
So, you know, when I write, I'm a firm believer in my process. Now, I don't write songs. My stuff is more long form, obviously, but I write everything, then I edit. I find that editing as I write really slows me down. And I find that just getting everything out there, and there's a great essay by the novelist Anne Lamott, and it's, the essay is called Shitty First Drafts, and her idea is that get everything out there and then revise. So are you waiting till you write everything and then revise? I feel like when you do that on the phone, it can be tempting to type something and then immediately delete it. But are you ever getting everything, do you get everything out there and then revise, or are you kind of revising as you go?
Well, I usually have like an immediate response to a feeling. And then I write it down with a kind of vague belief that the first way that first sentence or that first line or that first thought has been expressed, there's a good chance that is it, more or less, you know, that's the one, you know. And then when I kind of build on that and kind of I want to pull that thread further, and it becomes maybe a little bit more cerebral and less kind of like, you know, less spontaneous and maybe less immediately inspired. Then I kind of write whatever as well. Yeah, I suppose I edit after. But I really edit in that way that I was saying before about how I'll be talking to someone else, and then the line in its kind of in its not fine tuned form will kind of float into my consciousness. And I kind of like see a word like kind of get pulled out or whatever like that. And I feel like I edit really subconsciously. Like, you know how you kind of, you know how people say, like, you know, if you kind of busy your hands, you know, at a job or whatever like that, with, you know, kind of, I don't know, counting cash or whatever like that, or doing something like that, your brain will work subconsciously on a problem, like be it a, like a maths problem or whatever. It's a similar thing for me with editing, you know. I think I kind of subconsciously hone things, and then it'll kind of just come up, you know, what it is. But I really enjoy that process. I don't think there's anything less exciting
about. I love it. I've never heard that before. Usually editing can be a laborious chore because you feel like the product is done and you just want to set it aside. But I love the fact that you're just so into the fine tuning of those, of the sounds and the words and the grammar.
It's a fix. It's like this kind of conversation. You know, this is the kind of conversation that I like to have more than any kind of conversation in the world. You know, it's just like, it gives you a constant sense of approaching the substance or the essence of a thing. Like you and I are speaking about songwriting, and we feel like the whole way through this conversation that we're kind of getting closer to what it is. You know what I mean? And yeah. I find that exciting, but we're never going to get there, really.
I know. So one thing you brought up that's interesting, and I've had a lot of songwriters tell me, and you just alluded to this, is the ideas they get when they're doing mundane activities. And the author Agatha Christie once famously said, the best time to write a book is when you're doing the dishes. And so a lot of songwriters tell me they get song ideas when they are cleaning, gardening, vacuuming, doing, as you alluded to, those mundane activities that require no thought, no conscious thought, almost unconscious. And I'm not talking about driving and all those kind of things, but the kind of mundane activities. And it could be walking, but I'm curious, does that happen a lot? And I know that's, and I guess here's my point. And when I was a professor, I told my students, you're writing, and this is exactly what we were saying, your writing process never stops. Your writing process is taking place when you're eating, sleeping, drinking, doing whatever. But if you only think your writing process is happening when you're putting pen to paper, you're never going to get far. But keeping your mind open and understanding that your writing process is happening when you're gardening or doing the dishes or eating, that I think can make you a much more effective writer. And I think that's important. But I guess that's a commentary. But I guess the question is, are those song ideas? I find absolutely I get the best writing ideas when I'm trying not to think about writing. So how often is that happening for you during those mundane activities?
I think I totally agree with your commentary about being constantly writing and Agatha Christie's thing about doing the dishes. And I had a lot of jobs that kind of, I lasted in a job for more than a year ever. I had like six jobs before the band started doing well. And I found those times, maybe because a lot of them were in the service industry, it was kind of exacerbated, but those times were great for me for songwriting because I was forced to kind of take on this kind of role of like the face of some kind of organization that I didn't really like know anything about or understand. Like just like even if it was just like I worked in like a bookshop chain for a while. I sold scratch cards on the street for a while as well. Like just these like scratch cards for quote unquote charity. I found out like years later that it was a pretty like bullshit organization. But all of these things kind of forced me to shelve my personality and my thoughts in order to kind of get the job done. Right. Do you know what I mean? Kind of these customer face kind of these customer interaction jobs, they kind of force you to drift away from who you are and kind of deny yourself, you know, yourself, you know, for a while. And I think that made me kind of come out in on the page a lot more, you know, like on my break time, my lunchtime, stuff like that. So I think that was like maybe something similar. But yeah, just like walking and doing the dishes and stuff like that. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it is. You know, I love the fact that I don't, I suppose, at all. But Yeah, I definitely agree. For me, because I kind of don't have a fixed sort of time or place to write, there are no boundaries established.
Right.
And it can be, and I mean this seriously, it can be like frustrating and exhausting, because there's a threat of getting sucked into that world kind of basically at all times. And I am actually really tired right now because I haven't established those boundaries, you know, and it's been fun, but it's constant.
I read the study. You'll appreciate this with Salvador Dali. And it involves this state of sleep. And there's a term for it. I always forget what it is. It's not sleep. It's not awake. It's that state right before you go to sleep when you're in this haze. And this is what Salvador, and they've studied this actually with creative types. And the story involves Salvador Dali. Here's what he would do. He would sit in this uncomfortable chair, and he'd hold a skeleton key in his outstretched hand. And under the skeleton key, there'd be a saucer, a plate on the floor. When he would fall asleep, of course, he'd loosen his hold on the key would drop, it would make a sound, it would wake him up, and then he'd start to paint. And he found that state of that hazy state before you're in sleep to be the most fruitful time. And there's a name for it, and I always forget what it is. But is that have you ever had that to be an especially productive time, maybe when you're falling asleep? Not in the middle of the night, but when you're about to fall asleep. And again, it's interesting with the creative types often get a lot of great ideas, not just songwriters, but other types in that state right before they drift off.
Yeah. I get it an awful lot when I'm sleep deprived, actually, which I think is probably a similar thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Kind of it's obviously not actually hallucinatory, but it's like it does kind of invite like this an element of fantasy to your day when you are sort of sleep deprived, you know. And I think we flew from London to LA like 4 days ago. So for the last few days, it was like a 10, 11 hour flight. And I'm exhausted, and I feel like my lyrics the last few days have been better than they have been for the last few weeks, you know. And I think that's part of that reason. It's like, it's kind of, to me, it's like shuffling the deck, you know what I mean? And I think like when you shuffle the deck, you have access to all of these different colors, and even words sometimes that I forgot that I knew kind of come back when I'm like exhausted or whatever. And it's just, I don't know, it's kind of, you end up painting with colors that you've forgotten about, or you've forgotten that you had any kind of relationship with or attachment to. And you realize that, you know, I think you're kind of multifaceted in those ways as well. I think my imagery and my voice kind of can shift a little bit when I'm in that state as well, which is really exciting for me. Just to bank it and kind of revisit it later, you know.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. I mean, there's actually a picture in the study of Salvador Dali. He's in this, and it's in this incredibly uncomfortable chair, and he's about to fall asleep, and he's got this key. But I thought that was interesting that he actually uses that purposely. It's not, he actually uses that as a part of his ritual, where he says, when that key drops and it makes that noise, that's when I go paint. So,
yeah, I'm not sure if it was Bowie, but I was told it was Bowie who had his, who had the morning papers routine, right?
I hear that a lot too.
Yeah. And there's, he also did a thing where he cut up loads of different words from newspapers, right? Random words, and put them in a bag or whatever and shuffle them. And he'd take out like 5 words and he'd write based on those words, you know?
I've heard that too.
It's kind of just like casting a line out into unknown waters, you know?
Hemingway famously said that, well, maybe not famously, but Ernest Hemingway said that all writers should go to art galleries to be inspired. You know, it's funny because he's telling writers to go to another type of medium to get inspired. So I'm curious if that happens to you. Do you feel like you can get inspiration? I know that you're, you know, it's well documented how much you read, but other types of art, visual arts, does that inspire you?
Yeah. I'm thinking about this more and more recently. You know, Pedro Almodovar.
Yes.
So a couple of years ago, I think he really, he opened my eyes to the fact that I was kind of inspired by that medium. I think he's special for me because there's a certain kind of appreciation of life imbued into his films, in the same way that there is in certain poems, kind of certain poetry can fill you with energy for living, for seeing things and appreciating things in a romantic or poetic or just appreciative kind of capacity. And for me, filmmakers like Sorrentino, you know, who did The Great Beauty and Hand of God and stuff, there's this genuine, like, overwhelming affection for how life looks, you know, visually, that I find really, it's like, it's really emotional. It's kind of like, he's just kind of, he reopens your eyes to the beauty that is already there. You know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know. He fills me with an appreciation for, the visual side of life, or just the way that things, the kind of emotional, the emotional aspect of the visual world, that, like, you know, I kind of think that I will appreciate on my deathbed. Do you know what I mean? It's
yeah.
It's kind of like that, kind of like casting your inner eye back on your, all of your experiences and all the people and all the friends and stuff that you've ever known, and seeing them in what I imagine to be a Sorrentino-esque visual.
So those things are, yes, those are directly inspiring to you as a songwriter. That's, yeah, it sounds like.
Yeah. And they're also, you know, I find films really good to just, I mean, good films, you know, films that kind of like say something to you. I feel like just dipping in and out of those is a good way of keeping yourself connected to the emotional world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
'Cause it's very easy to dry up. And once you dry up, it can be quite difficult to get back to that level of appreciation.
Well, speaking of that, and again, another Hemingway quote, Hemingway said he could never write about Paris when he was in Paris. He always needed distance from a place or an emotion to be able to write about it. But there are some songwriters that say you need the immediacy. So where do you fall in that? Are you a person that needs that distance or the immediacy to be the most effective?
I like the distance. I'm more of a dreamer, I think. do you know what I mean? I had this job in Dublin where I'd get up at like 4 o'clock in the morning and I'd walk through the usually pissing rain streets, right? For like 40-50 minutes to this hotel. And it couldn't have been more Dublin, you know, it couldn't have been wetter and darker, right, and cloudier. And all these like fucking, you know, cabs and shit just like speeding by, splashing water all over your shoes and stuff like that. It was that kind of feeling anyway. That's how I remember it. And I used to listen to the Beach Boys on that walk all the time, which was just the exact opposite, you know. It was
right.
taking me to the other side of the world. And I don't know, I think honestly I was aware of the kind of perverse nature of marrying those two experiences together, but at the same time it was like an exercise almost in imagination. And I love that, you know. I find it really easy to write in like sort of like soulless franchises and chains. Sitting down at a you know, a coffee shop or whatever, of which there are hundreds of thousands, and there's nothing unique or special about this one. And I think that removes the pressure and removes takes me out of context in the same way that planes do, and in the same way that yeah, just transit and all that kind of stuff does as well, you know?
And I wonder, because some songwriters tell me that they, how often they like to write on the back of letters or envelopes or hotel stationery. And I imagine that's, you know, as I think about it, that kind of lessens the pressure. You know, no one sits down and says, I'm going to write on the back of a bill of an electricity, of a utility bill that I got in the mail. Isn't that
beautifully like poetic and true though, that it's easy to write on the back of things, you know, and not the pressure of it being on the front, you know?
Yeah.
You know, all the things worth putting on the front are written in the privacy of the back, you know?
Jesus, that's, I never thought about that, but that makes so much sense, but it does, it lessens the pressure. You know, I get a lot of ideas. I use at least, the one thing I do is I do a lot of, I like to exercise, and I find that exercise, whether it's walking or running, is a great way. Like when I'm in a rut, when I find that it's not happening, the worst thing that I can do is sit there and try to force it. I actually use walking. We talked about, you mentioned walking earlier, but I use walking as a deliberate way to get out of ruts. When I find that the words just aren't coming, I actually get out of my seat, go take a walk. And I find that's a great way to clear my mind. And since I know you love to read, there's a great book by a guy named Adam Sisman called The Friendship. And it's about the friendship between Wordsworth and Coleridge, and how Wordsworth and Coleridge both wrote almost all of their poems on walks. And Wordsworth would compose poems in his mind and revise them in his mind and wouldn't come back in the house until they were fully formed. And that's just mind blowing to me.
Yeah, I think walking is good for me because it kind of because there's an autonomy to it. Like I'm going for a walk on my own, and that's what I'm going to do. Do you know what I mean? And there's not like a current around you. You know, there's not like the itinerary of a day necessarily, or you know, you're not kind of like looking around the house and seeing things that need to be done, or seeing spaces that that hold memories, you know, that you kind of like that are recent or whatever like that. There's not a direction employed. I also think that walking without a destination is great, but I think walking with a destination is great too.
Listen, I just read a couple of days ago, you know, Walt Whitman in the opening lines of, I think it's song Leaves of Grass, I think I forgot, but Whitman in the opening line talks about the importance of what he calls loafing, that loafing is the best way to be creative. I forgot what the line is, but he mentioned, he says loafing. He's a big loafer. Loafing is when he gets his ideas. That's kind of what we're talking about. Like wandering aimlessly without a destination.
Yeah. It's
so incredible. Yeah. All right. Last question. So, you know, for me, when people ask me who my favorite authors are, I'm the kind of reader, and I read every day. When I finish a book by an author, my first reaction isn't to read that author again. It's to read another writer, because I want another voice in my head, a different voice. And so do you follow a writer and think, I'm going to read everything by that person? Or are you the kind of reader that likes to just get a lot of voices of differing types in your head?
I'm probably a reader that likes to go through, a back catalogue. You know, I think I've been like that my whole life with directors and stuff like that. I've watched I don't know how many films he has, but I watched like 20 films by Mike Lee in a month over lockdown, because I was just like, I am this for this month. You know what I mean? I want to see the world through these eyes for this month. And in doing so, sort of like further intensify the lens of him. You know what I mean? I want by the end of this month to like really fucking see the world through his films. I've done that with poets a good bit. It's funny. Sometimes I get disappointed and I feel betrayed, because they're often different in of themselves. Do you know what I mean? Their actual works are, you know, like they're multifaceted writers like Patrick Kavanagh, you know, the Irish poet, you know.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I was upset almost at the fact that, you know, I went looking for a lot of poetry of his to be just like in a Skene Row July evening, and found out that it turns out that he's actually written about many different things, and I had to come to terms with that. But there's a joy in kind of like bending to the world, to the shape of a writer, of another writer, you know, and that's the whole point, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you try to read? I make time to read every day. I mean, I find that, you know, even if it means cutting something else, cutting something else short during my day, I try to make some time to read, you know, 20, 30 minutes, I mean, of good interrupted reading. Do you try to find time to do that every day?
I would like to, but the truth is that I think often I'm kind of too much on transmit to sort of receive, you know.
Yeah.
And that's not always the case, you know. And I do tend to have kind of periods of, I have long periods of being on transmit and then long periods of being on receive, you know. I always think of that song "Oscillate Wildly" by the Smiths, you know, because that's what it is. It's an oscillation, you know.
And that's it for the latest episode of Songwriters on Process. Don't forget, you can find all of my interviews with over 200 songwriters on my Songwriters on Process website at songwritersonprocess.com, going all the way back to 2010. You can read them, watch them, or listen to them. So until next time, thanks for listening.